welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I am James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. Until the safety of the vaccine is confirmed, please refrain from entering our facilities. We have got that story, plus free little pantries all around the world. But first, the Internet Archive is back as a read-only service after cyber attacks. The Wayback Machine is back online after a data breach and a DDoS. James, I don't know how many times I've still, just because I use it so much of part of as what I do, how many times I've landed on archive.org and gone, oh crap, that's right, it's down. The Internet Archive is back online in a read-only state after a cyber attack brought down the digital library and Wayback Machine last week. A data breach and DDoS attack kicked the site offline October 9th with a user authentication database containing 31 million unique records also stolen in recent weeks. The Internet Archive now back online in a provisional read-only manner, according to founder Brewster Colley. Safe to resume, but might need further maintenance, in which case it will be suspended again. While you can access the Wayback Machine to search 916 billion web pages that have been archived over time, you can't currently capture an existing web page into the archive. And James, if there's a way into just the media uploads, I haven't been able to find it. Of course, among a million other things, there's, of course, the giant repository of old-time radio. Essentially, everything is up there, and it's just now what's... This is kind of like History Commons, man. I wanted and needed the 9/11 timeline, and suddenly it's not there. Colley and team have gradually been restoring archive.org services in recent days, including bringing back the team's email accounts and the crawlers for its national libraries. Services have been offline so that Internet Archive staff can examine and strengthen them against future attacks. A pop-up from a purported hacker claimed the archive had suffered a catastrophic security breach last week before Have I Been Pwned confirmed the data was stolen. The theft included email addresses, screen names, hashed passwords, and other internal data for 31 million unique email accounts, including one of my old ones, and James, I assume, one of your old ones as well. The Internet Archive outage came just weeks after Google started adding links to archived websites in the Wayback Machine. Google removed its own cached pages links earlier this year, so having the Wayback Machine linked in Google search results was a useful way to access older versions of websites or archived pages. James, this is kind of a big deal, and I know I've had some people in my own chat say, whatever, just use archive.today, archive.is. It's similar, but I haven't come up with the analogy, but it's like about 30 years of difference worth of just the content and the work that's been put into it, James. This is, we can't really understate how massive this might be.
Yes, and also how confusing it is, because as you say, I think there are a lot of people who think that archive.today is the Internet Archive, but no, they're separate things and they work in different ways, as you indicate there. Also, just to clarify, for at least on my side right now, archive.org is still giving this website is down. It's the Wayback Machine that is at least partially functioning at the moment, but that the Wayback Machine is just one part of the Internet Archive. And of course, there's all the other stuff, the television news archive, the 9/11 archive, all the audio archives, the lending library, which, oh, by the way, of course, has been crippled by the publisher lawsuit that they lost earlier this year. All of that stuff. So all of that is swirling around the Internet Archive right now. And as you say, as much as you use it, I use it constantly in my research. So it is definitely a thorn in the side for it to be down right now. But here we are. And why? Why are we here? This in and of itself is, at least at this moment, from what I've read many different reports from different outlets about this, and they all phrase it slightly differently and put different emphasis on what's going on. We can, at the very least, we can point out that SN Black Meta on Twitter, which is the Twitter account of some hacker group called Black Meta, is claiming responsibility at least for the DDoS side of this attack, the distributed denial of service that has brought down the servers. But it's unclear. Some outlets have actually stated that that is coincidental to the data breach that took place, or that the data, we don't know who actually hacked the data, as in the people's usernames and emails and passwords and what have you. So that might be that might be unrelated, it might be related, we don't know who did with that. This Black Meta group has been tied, I'll read this from a Newsweek article, which it just gets confusing. So SN Black Manta, who claimed responsibility for the attack, has previously been linked to other cyber attacks, including a record-breaking DDoS attack against a Middle Eastern financial institution earlier this year. The hacktivist group, who emerged in November 2023 and previously targeted the Internet Archive with a DDoS attack in May 2024, battered the Middle Eastern Financial Institute for 6 days with attacks using a new DDoS for hire service called InfraShutdown. Cybersecurity firm Radware connected SN Black Manta to a pro-Palestinian hacktivist movement that utilizes DDoS for hire services like InfraShutdown. In posts on X from October 9th, SN Black Manta stated, "The Internet Archive has and is suffering from a devastating attack. We have been launching several highly successful attacks for long hours, and to the moment, all their systems are completely down." And so you can go to that Twitter post, and I'll link that up, and in the reader community context note that has been added to that Twitter post, the Twitter community is saying, "This group claims they took down the Internet Archive because it belongs to the USA, who supports Israel, which is not true. The archive is not U.S. government. It's nonprofit that includes many resources about Palestine, which we can't now access because of this attack." Okay, but where are they claiming that this was about Israel? I don't see the post. I think we have this Radware firm that has connected this group to a pro-Palestinian hacktivist group in the past. But like everything else with this cyber false flag kind of thing, oh, okay, well, Radware says it, I guess it must be true. Wait, how do we know any of this? Who is behind them? What is happening? Anyway, I don't know. I have no idea how to parse any of what is happening right now, other than I think there are a lot of deep state actors and other interests that would be interested in removing a repository of information like the Internet Archive. So there may be shady shenanigans going on here. All I know is, yes, it's an extremely useful resource in my research, and it is not currently available, at least for the most part.
So, James, it's almost like the terror attack could be the distraction for the real heist in that Die Hard with a Vengeance type way. Good grief. Well, so basically, the only reason you could prefer Archive today is the one thing that archive.org is still doing. You can still search for archived web pages on the internet. Again, there's a whole other side of archive.org that, again, audio, video, the early years of Media Monarchy, all my stuff is up there. I've made copies of the complete 9/11 synchronicity podcast series from our buddy Richard Grove, just so that it was up all of it in its entirety on archive.org. Now, yeah, locked out of all of that. That's how we get going on New World Next Week, episode 568, documenting the real news. Unverified info, however, on new vaccine leads to rejection of customers. James, this is an interesting one from Asahi.com. You're going to have to explain a little bit of this. Some stores and medical-related facilities have refused service for people inoculated with the Replicon COVID-19 vaccine because of unsubstantiated rumors about the dangers of the shots. Health Minister Takamori Fukuoka tried to dispel fears that have spread over the internet that Replicon vaccine components can infect unvaccinated people. There's no scientific evidence that the vaccine components can be transmitted to others and cause health damage, Fukuoka said at a news conference October 4th, but concerns have persisted since a Replicon vaccine shot started in Japan this fiscal year, which is an interesting way to put it. The Replicon vaccine is structured to make self-copies of mRNA, a blueprint part of the virus, inside cells and to temporarily increase the amount of mRNA. The vaccine is called self-amplifying because it replicates within the body. At clinical trials conducted in Japan, some patients felt pain in the injected parts of their body. Other subjects felt a sense of fatigue as a side effect. However, most of the symptoms were mild or moderate and disappeared a few days after the shots were administered. The vaccine's self-amplifying nature has led to rumors that components of the actual virus can be transmitted from inoculated individuals to others. We are refusing to allow people who took Replicon vaccines to enter our store for a while, a hair salon in the Gunma Prefecture said on its blog. The owner of the hair salon said in her 50s, said she learned about the risks from social media and books. She said she previously had not rejected people from her store because of vaccines, but she has long distrusted the government and the media because they haven't provided information on the disadvantages of COVID-19 vaccines. A company that operates a hot yoga studio chain, Lava, told Replicant vaccine users on its website, "Until the safety of the vaccine is confirmed, please refrain from entering our facilities." When asked by Asahi reporters about the policy, the company said in an email, quote, "We refrain from providing any information behind what has been announced on the official website." A dental clinic in Tokyo asked patients who took the Replicon vaccines to wait 6 months after the shots before entering the clinic again. It said the vaccine side effects wear off after 6 months. An official of the medical corporation that operates the dental clinic said it decided on the policy based on information gained through the internet and books that pointed out the dangers of the Replicon vaccine. "Although I didn't read the books, we thought it would be better to avoid Replicon vaccinated patients if such books have been published," the official said. Again, possibly maybe a little bit of a wonky translation here. The official also feels the government hasn't explained enough about the risks of the vaccine. "We can't figure out what it is. We thought if safety's not adequately confirmed, we should avoid it," the official said. And this isn't coming from fall 2020. The short version: experts move to allay Replicon COVID shot fears in Japan amid backlash. A new COVID-19 vaccine has sparked extreme anxiety among parts of the public, leading some businesses to deny services to those who have received the shot and causing at least one clinic to stop giving the vaccine for fear of being harassed. And the award for the best scamdemic goes to: two scientists win Nobel Prize in Medicine for enabling the creation of these mRNA monstrosities. James, Replicon sounds kind of cool, like a bad guy or a horror movie or a metal band, but what's going on here?
Well, if you need more information about Replicon, you have come to the right place. So I would once again direct people to my editorial from last month on Replicon: Big Pharma Preps the Next Bioweapon, where I talk about the self-amplifying mRNA vaccines, which are, of course, gene therapy, but an upgrade of the old, the outdated 2020 kind of mRNA vaccines. No, this is self-amplifying, as in it will actually start producing the mRNA within your own body that then hijacks your body's cells and starts producing proteins, etc. So if self-amplifying just by itself seems a bit cause for concern, even if you think mRNA vaccines themselves are mother's milk, which of course they are not, they are deadly bioweapons, but this will be, at the very least, brings with it all of the possibility of, well, if you're shedding this, the proteins and other things that the mRNA vaccines, well, are you going to be shedding the Replicon protease or whatever it is that's creating the mRNA? Are you going to be shedding that too? Is this essentially going to spread throughout the population? That is a genuine and, I would say, not unfounded fear, because, yes, the rigorous clinical trials that brought this to us included such things as a 3-month human study in Vietnam that followed most of the subjects for a period of about 1 month after receiving their dose. And hey, you know, good enough. Although, of course, even Science Magazine did point out there were some very, very strange adverse reactions, but whatever. Most people seemed all right after a month. Anyway, total nonsense. But if people want more about the context of this, of course, please see my recent podcast episode on Japan Rising, where I was in Tokyo and going to the International Crisis Summit conference about this, and have footage of the doctors talking about this, etc., etc. So there's a lot of information here, but long story short, yes, I know this is not good news exactly, but the fact that the Japanese population is showing signs of pushback, at least enough for the mainstream establishment mockingbird mouthpieces to start flashing the warning signal, hey guys, fall in line, remember, trust the science, shows that there is pushback that is happening against this, and it is reaching out into everyday life. I have heard anecdotally here from someone in Osaka who received a pamphlet in the mail warning about the Replicon vaccine from someone who he doesn't know. So there you go. The word is getting out. People are at the very least, skeptical and quizzical about this, and some businesses are taking the responsibility into their own hands. Hey, if you have this, don't come into our store. At the very least, the word is getting out. I don't know about the effects of this yet, because it has just rolled out in the past couple of weeks, and really only for the elderly receiving their eighth, that is not an exaggeration, their eighth COVID booster. Some of them will be receiving Replicon. Who's following which ones are receiving the Replicon and what the effects of that are going to be? Yeah, just let's just sit back and trust the government on this one. Anyway, I will, of course, be reporting as this continues to develop. But as I say, at the very, very least, the Japanese public is becoming increasingly aware of this issue and increasingly concerned about it. And that is something of a hopeful sign that, at the very least, people aren't swallowing the scamdemic nonsense at this point and are putting at least trying on the critical thinking cap. Trying it on for size. See how it feels. We'll see what develops from this.
Yeah, you start off with the, like, off-the-rack stuff, and then you hopefully move up to, like, the fitted cap of critical thinking. James, it's like a horror movie. But mask mandates are popping back up in places in California. I was reporting on my morning show this morning, and of course then people in the chat going, oh, yep, I see it at the store now. Oh, I'm seeing it more in my town. I'm wondering, because this is what they've already done with the COVID shots, get your flu shot and COVID shot at the same time. They're just going to roll it all into, well, you always wear a mask in the fall, and I always get the double tap of these two weird things that have a very low efficacy rate. Conspiracy theory not required. They admit themselves when you ask them a year later, oh, it was about 26% effective against this year's flu virus. That's not a passing grade in school. And I know, because I struggled with that. Our third and final story flips the script, James, and does a little bit of good news on this New World Next Week episode. A little good news next week. Community Fridge saves 24,000 meals from the landfill. Tens of thousands of meals have been saved from being dumped thanks to a community fridge in County Tyrone, that is in Northern Ireland, and I will not correctly pronounce some of these other Irish locations. Local supermarkets and businesses donate fresh food, keeping the fridges stocked with perishable food which was destined for the landfill. Angela O'Brien, who operates the Owen Killu Center, where the community fridge in Gorton is based, said it saved 10 tons of food, 24,000 meals since it was set up only last year in 2023. She said it was horrendous to see so much food being thrown out when it could be used by families. I don't think you really have to be Christian or religious to know that wasting food is a sin. The Community Fridge Network is coordinated by Hubbub, a UK-wide charity dedicated to promoting sustainability and protecting the environment. The first community fridge to open its doors in Northern Ireland was in Claw Mills in County Antrim, actually way back in 2017, which gets back to about how long these things have really been going on. They've been growing in popularity since then and are now 15 run by community groups and volunteers in shared spaces, schools, community centers. Anyone can use them, and anyone can really set them up. It doesn't take some international NGO. You can just do it and make it yourself. The worst that'll happen is some county commissioner will try and raise a stink about it. But again, if you keep putting them up, they won't keep up with it. We'll include a bunch of links. Community Fridge Network UK off of hubbub.org. You may have heard of free little libraries, but how about a free little pantries? Take what you need, give what you can. Littlefreepantry.org, littlefreelibrary.org. And James, you know, we've been talking about this for nearly a decade, since at least 2016. Good news next week. That was my somewhat short-lived spinoff from New World Next Week. Little pantries on your sidewalk give shelf-stable help. That's from August 2016. And right here on New World Next Week, government must stop free little libraries for the sake of the nation. Free knowledge put out for anyone. There are now 75,000 little free libraries around the world. That's from September 2018. And again, it doesn't have to just be books. It doesn't have to just be shelf-stable items for food. Fighting fast fashion with clothing libraries. Think about all the clothes people have that they don't really use and wear. I believe we've even talked, James, about a tool library. There used to be one in Portland, Oregon. I'd like to think that's still a part of the new Portland landscape. A tool library where you go and check out tools that you need. Instead of owning a chainsaw, you could go check one out for the weekend, James. Again, whether it's Airbnb, whether it's your own local currencies, the big names are Airbnb, Invent, all the... But it's the idea. It's the idea that's powerful. And it's the idea that no company and no NGO can copyright and own. The ideas are powerful and out there, and people can just do it. And again, not ask. Don't wait for permission. Just do it. James?
Yes, thank you for stating that. That is exactly the founding ethos of Solutions Watch. All of these ideas are just ideas, and you can take them and apply them however they fit into your environment. You do not need to ask permission. You do not need to check with anyone. You do not need to get any special license or permit. Just start doing these types of things. So thank you to all the Johnny Appleseeds doing this in all of the various forms that you're talking about there, not just the food, but books and clothes and tools and whatever else that people can do to share with those around them in their community. And it is, as I always say, it's those community connections that are going to see us through whatever times our trying times are going to be visiting us in the not so distant future. So yes, hats off to people who are doing this. And you know what? I think this deserves a happy version of the New World Next Week, Si. At least people are doing something.
Thanks. Thanks for that. And we'll thank our buddy Brock West, video editor extraordinaire, actually, for that story about the free little libraries. Again, reminding us of the good, positive, solutions-oriented things that are going on. It's not all just doom and gloom and skulls and horror and October surprises. NewWorldNextWeek.com is a way to support Media Monarchy. It's a way to support Korber Report. We've got his USBs, his DVDs. We've got shirts and hats and toques for both of us. And that helps keep both of our works fear-free and ad-free, and you've never seen us shill for any weird products. Although, James, sometimes people do joke, I'd buy snake oil from you guys. I don't know what funny thing to put what snake oil would be, but I do want to mention a couple of things, like what's Media Monarchy? Media Monarchy is a website I started back in 2005. It was back when we were bloggers. And we were posting and aggregating news sites. And it was a lot more work back then because there weren't tens of thousands of other people really doing all the work at the same time. It was a much smaller group of people. So it was a harder bit of work to collate the news and try and get that out to as many people as possible. I started to do a live radio and internet broadcast in 2006 called Media Monarchy. That was a once a week thing. And as the years have grown by, I was able to quit my regular day normie job and turn Media Monarchy into my regular 5 days a week, really 7 days a week job, where it is now a broadcast running 8 days a week. And I play what I call news, music, memes, and more. I do my own morning news broadcast for about an hour. I play a lot of music. I came from music radio. So even though 9/11 Truth maybe broke my brain 25 years ago, I still never wanted to lose that musical element. And that's why I call it Media Monarchy. So on that note, I'm doing a month-long horror film festival, and I've joked on here before. I know that immediately excludes a giant portion of the audience, as I'm wearing my horror soundtrack record label evil hoodie here on this episode. James, I think it's educational in a lot of the ways. So last night we actually played Zodiac and Summer of Sam, two kind of mainstream normie movies by David Fincher and Spike Lee that get to what it, I mean, everybody's got their areas in conspiriana. Some people are, as I've joked before, into all the weather conspiracies. Other people are into intelligence agencies performing ritualistic murders to pass it off as some kind of satanic panic. So we're actually doing Paradise Lost about the West Memphis Three tonight. And then tomorrow, Thursday, October 17th, we will be joined in the watch along in the Media Monarchy chat for top tier $10 Media Monarchy members only. Our buddy James Corbett, as we watch American Conspiracy, The Octopus Murders. You've heard me discussing this recently, not only as part of my Shocktober Surprise Horror Film Festival, but also because of what an event it was that Netflix decided to do a series on what has always been, again, kind of a fringe conspiriana nerd story about this reporter who shows up dead in West Virginia who was chasing the tail of what he called the octopus and how it connects to software and Israel and Mossad agents and the Epstein network and bin Laden and all of those things. So, James, I'm stoked you'll be joining us tomorrow. It's going to be epic. We're going to play all the episodes of the documentary. So you get your get your sleeps and get your fitted thinking cap on.
Exactly right. No, I'm looking forward to it because, as I said last week, I haven't seen this yet, so I'm definitely going to be interested to see what angle they take on it. But for to preparation, for people who haven't heard your Octopus New Time radio presentation, you don't pip that enough. It is an excellent 5-episode series that you guys recorded based on a John Klein original play that you'd adapted into this radio script, and it's puts the situation of Danny Casolaro and what happened to him into its context. It's an excellent play, and it comes with all of this extra information, including episodes of The Corbett Report and other things to give you more info about the Octopus. So for people who haven't checked it out yet, please do. It's at newworldnextweek.com, and you can purchase the digital download.
Thanks so much for that, buddy. That is New World Next Week, episode 568. I believe that wraps it up for me. James, I appreciate you, man.
Awesome. Let's do it again, and see you tomorrow in the Media Monarchy chat. I hope everyone will be there, and I'll see you next week.
Awesome. Take care.